Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Westchester County Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. He's been on many times with us in the past. Welcome back, George Latimer.
David, nice to be with you again.
I don't know if you realize this, but I have to ask you this before we begin any serious discussion. Did you know that your namesake is the former mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota?
I did. And a quick story. I was a councilman in my home community of Rye back in the late 1980s. And I had a business career as national director of sales of a company. And I had reason to be in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area meeting with some clients, national clients that my company had.
Right.
And when we set up the appointments, George Latimer was the mayor. I found that out. And I went in to meet Mayor Latimer. And it was a little blurb on TV. Mayor Latimer meets Councilman Latimer. He was a very is a very dynamic guy. And it made a little mini headline for me back early in my council career.
So there you go. And the story I saw was that he's cheated death. Now, he's 88 years old. He's the former St. Paul mayor. And he apparently, he was joking about this, they kicked him out of hospice. So good for him. He's still going.
Well, I'm happy to know he's still punching. He's quite a guy. They named a library in St. Paul after him. Whenever you Google George Latimer, that's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah. Well, let's get a little more serious. Obviously, this week was devastating for parts of New York and, of course, Vermont. Catastrophic in spots. And we're seeing more and more of these kinds of storms as the climate is heating up. You, of course, in Westchester County, but part of your county got hit pretty hard and was under states of emergency. Why don't you give us a sense of what happened there, you know, and how we're going to deal with this going forward?
Well, first off, the northwestern corner of our county, which is what borders Putnam, North and Rockland, and the affected portion of Orange County was also affected. So that draws a circle around where the four counties almost meet. And that portion of our county was affected. Yorktown had it the roughest, lots of trees down. Town of Courtland, City of Peekskill, and Town of Ossining. We had some damage on our Mohansett Golf Course. The Metro North Hudson Line was closed for a few days. It was, you know, as always, as happened when we had Hurricane Ida linger over our county 2 years ago in September, and Hurricane Isaias, unexpected intensity. And that is what I think we're seeing with the climate change concern, that we always have had storms of some sort, but the intensity level seems to be much greater. And when you have this amount of rain and wind in such a short period of time, power lines go down, there's debris on the roadway, roads become impassable. You know, we've dug out from it pretty well. We did not have any fatalities in Westchester. We lost one of our neighbors in Orange County who died in the floods over in Highland Falls. So this is a serious problem. And whether it's the air quality from Quebec wildfires or not, these are things we have not seen before. I'm not a scientist, Dave. David, I have to assume that what science is telling us is that this is the impact of continued greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and the burn off of the ozone layer. And if we don't do something about it, the dire effects will just continue to grow.
What can you do for your part as the Westchester County Executive for your community?
Well, what we've tried to do in general is reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. As an example, we've electrified our bus system. The B-Line bus system, which is Westchester's public bus system, is run by the county, is now electric hybrid buses. So that has helped our carbon footprint. And we're expanding our electrical vehicle charging station infrastructure dramatically so that those that have electric or hybrid cars now can feel confident that as they drive around the county, there are places to charge up. That helps us cut back our footprint. We're reducing the amount of waste that we put into our garbage-to-energy plant. The less of that that gets burned, the better off it is. These are small steps, but, you know, a county government can't set policy across the board in these areas. That really is the federal government and, to some extent, the state government's responsibility. But we're doing what we can. We've used energy demand to lower our use of electricity during peak periods of usage, and that helps the electric grid maintain its integrity. So they're defined steps, but I wouldn't want to trumpet them as they're the answer. But if everybody does their share, individuals, counties, towns, villages, then we have a better chance of pushing back on this.
Yeah, and it's really an infrastructure question, isn't it? And we have a $4.2 billion bond act, environmental bond act, that passed. Citizens voted in favor. And I talked to the controller about this, Tom DiNapoli. Even he was supportive of it, you know, the idea of borrowing money to help with climate and environmental issues is important if we want to keep the place we call Earth livable.
Well, this bond act was well received in Westchester County, and we made every effort to inform voters about it. Obviously, you can't use government resources to promote a vote, but to inform them, to let them know when this was on the ballot last fall. And Westchester voters passed it by a higher margin of success than any county outside of New York. New York City, and we actually had a higher margin than the Bronx did, which is kind of amazing given the respective populations. So Westchester voters, and I think across the ideological spectrum, David, I think there are both and quite a few Republicans that voted for it. Now that we have this pool of money, the question is, how do we use it intelligently? We have a briefing coming up in mid-August from the state DEC. They're coming into one of our facilities, and they're going to brief local governments. I think it's going to be a regional meeting. We'll probably draw in Rockland, Putnam, Orange people, to talk about what we have to do to put together projects to claim some of the $4.2 billion. It's not, it's not a kitty to just spend money wildly out of. We have to come up with creative ways to reduce air pollution, to reduce water pollution, protect land sources. And if we have a solid plan, now we have a pool of money that we can tap into.
One of the other major issues in your community in Westchester County is housing. And we know the governor had a proposal to build 800,000 housing units over the next decade that didn't make it through the full negotiations. Obviously, there are still discussions and a huge issue when it comes to housing, not just in Westchester County. I know one of the discussions we had off mic was your interest in talking about this today. What is your present thinking on housing?
Well, first of all, I think the governor did us a service by raising the issue to the level of top level of importance of addressing it. She put it in her state of the state address. I was in the chamber when she delivered it, and I thought that was important. And I think by setting targets, 3% growth in number of units, I think she set a very realistic goal for us to strive. Now, in Westchester, I think probably unique amongst the suburban counties downstate, we embraced the message of developing housing, because we've been doing it now for the last 5.5 years. If you were to go to downtown New Rochelle, downtown White Plains, or the riverfront downtown area of Yonkers, you would see already on our own transit-oriented development that's significant in terms of additional housing units. Now, it may be that the New York suburbs in general are behind the Washington suburbs or some other area suburbs, but, you know, we went through 8 years of my predecessor's administration where they were not in favor of affordable housing. We've embraced it, and we've had more starts in Westchester, both affordable and overall market units, than the two counties on Long Island added together. That's not a knock on them. That's a sign of our willingness to embrace the message. However, in the original plan, there was a mandate on transit-oriented development, and there was also an override that the state could make over local zoning. Those were not well received in the suburbs, not in our county nor in other counties. So I think like most things that happen in Albany, you've been an astute observer of Albany for a long time. I spent 13 years in both houses of the legislature, so I've had my exposure to it. Things don't happen the first time through. So what do you learn from it? How do you reconfigure the proposal? How do you go forward? I think transit-oriented development is an important tool, but I think it has to be put at the option of the local governments as part of a plan that they develop that the state then scrutinizes and then tweaks. And if necessary, if there needs to be carrots and sticks, the carrots and sticks are applied to the particular plan done by the town, the village, the city, or the county. And the same would be true for other tools, such as conversion of office buildings to residential. We've had some of those in Westchester County. We've also seen, and I think we haven't talked much about this in the larger domain, but the need for a robust rehabilitation program. We have communities with lots of older housing stock where an across-the-board rehabilitation program could add units and then also upgrade existing units so you have more workable units, and particularly in the affordable area. So there are tools out there that make sense to me. I think, you know, the governor's housing people take a look at it. We've indicated that Westchester is using the tools that we have at our resources, capital money, IDA, financing, to try to advance housing. And there may be other places that haven't embraced it to the same level. So perhaps we would be a pilot program. We'll show what can be done because we're not a small suburban county. We're a million people. We're pretty sizable down here. And I think if we can do that, if we show a pilot program that can work in Westchester, then I think it can be replicated in other suburban municipalities.
You know, I don't want to put a negative spin on it, but I want to play a little bit of the devil's advocate. How much working against you is NIMBYism? In other words, not in my backyard. You know, some of the more wealthy areas in the suburbs, when they hear people hear affordable housing, you know, their ears perk up. They worry, well, will this bring problems? Will poor people, will be more crime or that kind of thing? Do you have to deal with that? Is that a hurdle in some cases for some communities?
Well, it is, to be honest with you. That's true. But NIMBYism isn't just rich people that don't want poor people living next to them. You talk about placing almost any structured facility in a neighborhood in the most urban part of New York City, where most of the people around them are poor. And you hear those people say, we don't want that in our neighborhood. It is a fact of life. I started my governmental career as a councilman in my home community, and that was an issue for some of the most you would consider benign presence of something where you have a recreational facility. That's a plus. We don't want that in our neighborhood. So I think any of us in any part of the state, urban, rural, or suburban, we have to deal with that. And the best way to deal with that, and I'm not saying that at the end of the day you don't have to have some sort of a stick, so to speak, to ensure enforcement and compliance, but you start out by trying to find the common ground and by taking a proposal, modifying it, you know, engaging with the people who oppose it, and getting it to the point where there can be some approval. Last night I was at a meeting in a senior citizen housing center with about 45 units on a piece of county-owned land in my home community that was built and opened. There was tremendous neighborhood opposition to it, and I remember I was in the state legislature at the time walking the site with some of the neighbors and hearing them concerned about the lighting and the noise and the traffic. And now the building is built and those same neighbors are accepting of it because the reality of it didn't match up to the fears that they had of it. And so those of us, if we're responsible elected officials, we just don't say, you know, you're wrong to have these fears, we're going to override what you have to say, but to work them through the fears and get them past it so that they can accept it. And the one case is possible, then it's possible in other cases as well. And it, you know, is a reality. Any of us in suburban life, it is a reality that we face every day when we try to accomplish any task. We have to work through some built-in opposition.
Yeah, and one of the most opposed and politicized issues that involves NIMBYism right now is asylum seekers. I mean, we've seen what's happened around the country and specifically in New York when New York City Mayor Eric Adams started sending migrants upstate. You were one of the few county executives that supported the migrants entering your county and wanted to work to help get them services. There were complaints. There were communities who said, you know, we weren't notified. We didn't have the proper information. They showed up with no identification. We didn't know what status they were. All sorts of issues here. And I wonder what you're thinking about the issue of asylum seekers as the country gets politically divided over the issue.
Well, we have to start with the macro situation, which is we have a tremendous desire at the southern border for people to escape their living conditions in those countries. For some, it's political suppression and oppression. In some cases, it's inability to make a living in rural poverty areas. In some cases, the grip of the drug cartels is so strong that you can't have an honest life or living. And so for all of those reasons and more, they come to America. I'm of Irish and Italian extraction. There's a reason why those Irish Latimers and Italian Mineros came to the United States of America back when they did,
right,
almost the exact same reasons. They may have come under different circumstances, but they weren't particularly welcomed. I don't remember the Irish or the Italians being loved when they landed. So in some ways, there's an analogy between my experience and my family's experience and the current day situation. However, the federal government really has not done what they need to do in establishing a logical and sensible program. Given that, we still have to deal with the reality. And the reality is there's an overflow at the southern border. That overflow, Governor Abbott started to bust them up to New York City, where there's a right to shelter law. And Mayor Adams, over the last year plus, has been dealing with a large number of migrants in his city. He reached a point at which he could not satisfy the demand within the boundaries of the city of New York. And so he's looking to place them outside of the city. It was a bumpy rollout, without question. And there are some things that, the city could have, should have, would have done a little bit differently. But the bottom line is Westchester took what I think is a very humane but very managerial mindset. We can do our share. Our share is not an unlimited number of asylum seekers. We don't have the capacity to serve that many. New York City indicated they were going to take on certain costs. We would be responsible, certainly, for public health. We'd be responsible for backup security. And we would embrace those responsibilities. Right now, we have three different locations in the county where we're housing approximately 350 asylum seekers. That's not as large as some other places, but we've been willing to do it without the rhetoric. And, you know, David, we're all who we are as people. I grew up as a working-class Catholic kid in a black neighborhood. I've spent time in corporate America, and those things influence me as much as my politics do. And what I see here is a challenge to manage a certain number of people who are in, who are here because they want to work, and they're here because they want a better life for their families. They're not here to disappear and become part of a gang. I've gone out there to meet some of these people, and except for the fact that I need a translator to communicate with them, they strike me almost the same way that the immigrant stock that I descended from must have been like were I to have talked to them back at the time they came. So a managerial approach so far is working. I'm working with the mayors of the three communities, and we're working cooperatively. I think it's working well. We've had no incidents of spread of disease. We've had no incidents of crime. I understand, as you said accurately, there's a division in the nation. There's a division in the nation about a lot of things. And a lot of it is very ideological and, candidly, very political. You know, Donald Trump said the way to handle immigration is build a big wall, a big, beautiful wall. That basically stakes out what the Republican position has been on this now for the last 5 to 10 years. There was a time when Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush had a different approach on this, John McCain, but that is not today's Republican Party. So the alternative is not an embracement open borders. The alternative is an intelligent managerial sense of handling a certain amount of the demand. Now, the federal government has to move forward. We've argued, I think all of us have argued, that we have to speed work visas because people who are here want to work, can work. We have entry-level positions going unfilled in the restaurant industry, in the gardening industry, and I'm sure it's true in the more rural parts of the state, in the agriculture industry. And we need to take that portion of the workforce and utilize it. And then also, I've argued for a U.S. federal courthouse in White Plains. I've argued for a satellite immigration court to be established in White Plains, which would bring to the top of the list the adjudicate the cases of those people that are placed in the northern suburbs. So whether they're in Westchester, Putnam, Rockland, Orange, Dutchess County, bring those cases to the top of the list, have a judge or judges in White Plains to adjudicate them so people aren't staying in a hotel room for a year. That's not tenable. That doesn't make any sense to me. And, of course, Mayor Adams is in the same boat, and I would argue Governor Hochul's in the same boat. We need the federal government to do their share, and we at the local level do our share. We've kept the rhetoric down, and I think, at least in my county, the response has been positive.
We're talking with George Latimer, the Westchester County Executive in New York. A law signed by Governor Kathy Hochul is aimed at bolstering the investigation and reporting requirements of hate crimes on college campuses in the state. But in general, George Latimer, we've seen a rise in anti-Semitism and racist acts. What are you encountering in Westchester County?
Well, I think we've seen an increase in all kinds of hate crimes, anti-Asian hate crimes, anti-immigrant or anti-Hispanic hate crimes have also risen, along with, you know, things that we've seen for a long period of time, anti-Semitism and racism. I think, you know, the zeitgeist of the country in the last couple of years has made more acceptable using free speech as the cover, the kind of expression of hatred that in proper society we did not express publicly. But in the last couple of years, and I think we know why, there's been a willingness to, you know, sort of let it all hang out and say the things you feel. And some of those things dehumanize each other. Ultimately, I think we want to get to what Dr. Martin Luther King talked about, which is judging people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin or their gender or their religion or any other factor. If a person behaves in an appropriate way in the society, is productive, they're treated with the same way that everybody else is treated, regardless of those factors. But there is hatred in the society. People, you know, look at groups of people as the other. And so to the extent that the governor's signing the bill helps us in the college campus environment, that is helpful. We have a robust human rights commission that has some enforcement powers, and they deal with some of these incidences, and they range in degrees of severity. And it's not just hate speech, but it's acts of hatred. When someone defaces a synagogue, or when somebody, you know, does something that's overtly against the Asian American community, we do our best to push back on it. We use public education as a tool, as well as the enforcement mechanism. It is an ongoing societal issue. It's much bigger than a county or even a state can deal with. But I think some of it, too, is just what's happening now with the freedom to express your opinions on social media. David, you and I are of a certain age. We did not grow up on social media. It didn't exist as a tool to express our opinions, but it exists now. And people use that to say all kinds of things amongst their quote-unquote group of friends, things that we would not utter in the past. And now we have to deal with a new way of communicating in America.
We're so old, there were only 4 TV channels when we were young.
Dinosaurs ruled the earth, David.
Well, here's a poll about what makes people afraid. 61% of New Yorkers are concerned about being a victim of crime. That's according to a new Siena poll from Siena College Research Institute this week. 21% say they're very concerned. 40% say they are somewhat concerned. Nearly 9 in 10 think crime is a serious problem in the state. Nearly 6 in 10 say it's a serious problem in their community. Even finds 40% of respondents have spent more than $100 on security. So people are afraid. Should they be? I mean, hasn't the majority of crime and violent crime gone down consistently over the years? And what is it that has us in this country so fearful of one another?
Well, you know, you must consider that in my corporate career, which was 20 years overlapping the beginning of my public career, I was a sales and marketing executive. And what I was told in sales training when I was a kid starting out is people buy for their reasons, not yours. In essence, to help me understand that perception is reality in the mind of the buyer of your service. And so it is amongst the constituents that I represent, perception. I think the fear of crime is what that polling shows. There's a fear of crime, and it's palpable and it's widespread. The incidence of crime does not compare to the fear of crime. But what we have tried to do in Westchester County, and our crime numbers are down over 5 years. I've been in office 5 years. We have five plus years. We have 5 years worth of statistics. Crime is down double digits in almost every single category. Certainly all the violent crimes are down. But every night when you watch TV, you're not watching TV about Westchester County alone or Armonk Village alone or Larchmont Village alone. You're watching what's happening in New York City, or you're watching a mass shooter in Baltimore or a mass shooter in Philadelphia. And when those stories lead, as you know how the media operates, what becomes newsworthy, that the sense that crime is everywhere and it's out of control. I have to tell you, I was a graduate school student in the mid-70s, and I worked in the Bronx. I went to NYU in Lower Manhattan, and I had an apartment in Mount Vernon in Westchester County. I rode a lot of subways late at night. Those were the days of Charles Bronson, Death Wish, the movie. Those were dangerous days to be on a subway train. The incidence of crime was much, much higher than what we have today. But the fear of crime today, you would think that we were in those days of the mid-70s where we had X, you know, number of murders in the city. So what we're trying to do is to allay the fear of crime. Yes, we have statistics, but let us show you what we're doing to fight crime. How are we using our police resources? How are we using technology to break up car theft rings? How are we out there doing street policing, and how are we out there doing community policing? What are we doing in our jails? And to show you what we're doing in our county jail to try to reduce recidivism by having programs to get people to steer away from crime when they come out of jail. What are we doing with our probation department to show that people, once they've paid their debt in prison and they're back out, that they have efforts made to try to steer them in the right direction? And those things are working. That's why we have a drop in crime. I do think that clearly there is a political benefit for some people to gin up the fear of crime. And if you're fearful and if you're angry, you're going to vote a certain way. You're going to vote because you think these people are going to be tough on crime. But the concept of toughness doesn't necessarily deter crime. People will say, lock him up, put him away. He won't be out on the street committing a crime. And that's going to make me safer. That doesn't deter the next guy who's going to do the crime. Other things deter that person. And that's what we focus on to try to address the need. And we try to do it constantly, not just waiting for the campaign season, but to talk about it year round and to put it in the context of all the things that we're doing. Westchester is fortunate. We have relatively low rates of crime, but we do have urbanized areas in Yonkers and Mount Vernon that have some incidence of crime that's higher than other parts of the county. But I think just as with everything we're talking about, the initiatives, we just have an initiative on lithium ion batteries. We have an initiative for access to counsel. We have an initiative to this, that, and the other thing. We're trying to show people that there's a rational, almost a corporate way to run a government. And we're Democrats, and we can cut taxes, and we have. That we can do this in a way that if you watch it on the specifics and the facts, it's well managed and you have reason to be confident.
We are delighted to have been speaking with Westchester County Executive George Latimer on this week's Capital Connection. George, I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for being with us.
David, so do I. Thanks so much.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.